October 29, 2021, it's Watch from Pedro Show. SWAT for Pedro show. Started off, Love Supreme Part 2, Resolution. This is live in Seattle, John Coltrane. Tape from Joe Brazil, the guy played flute on the Ohm record. He had this up, stored away, and they found it. And he only did this whole piece a couple times. Recorded, I think, 3 or 4 times altogether. But, you know, I got it last week. 77 minutes, it's more than twice the original. I listened to it 15 times straight, about 18 hours. I love it. Two basses, too. A cat named Donald Garrett joined Jimmy Garris. Then we had Barroom Slither. See You Next Tuesday soundtrack with Brian McComber, Evan Lipson, Mikey Heppner. Now, I know bass brother Evan Lipson because he's the cat who brought a lot of these fucking connects and righteous guests I've had. Got to have on the Swap from Pedro show. So I'm most grateful, brother. Evan Lipson. In fact, I think him and Ice have a new shipmate coming aboard. Now, people, because of those Estonian software engineers and their Skype invention, I got Brian McComber with me. Welcome aboard, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Absolute. And, yeah, brother Epson. Evan Lipson on the bass, and quite a network of musician cats he has. You know, it's really helped enrich both the show and my life. But I'm really curious about your music journey. It looks like you ended up in the movie business a little bit, or at least supplement the mix with the fucking ear hole, stuffing stuff in ear holes to go along with stuff that gets stuffed in eye holes.
Yep.
So, please bring your earliest musical recollection, Brian.
Yeah, my I was thinking about this. I think my first real musical memory was always sneaking over to my next door neighbor's house. So he's a few houses down, so like 3 houses down. But I'd always hear drum set in the distance because he had a band and they practiced in the basement of this sort of cul-de-sac suburb I grew up on. And so I would always sneak down and watch them through this little hole that was on the side of the house that you could see into the basement. And I was fascinated. I was a peeping Tom.
There's a weird movie called that. Have you ever seen that? Oh, my God. It was just But that was more about purring things. This was you got hankering for music. In fact, not just music, but drums.
Specifically the drums spoke to me really early on. Although when I started playing music, and once there was a music program in my middle school and I was old enough, I started on the trumpet, but I switched to the drums. I always wanted to play the drums.
Well, can I ask you, Brian, in the pad you grew up, not 3 doors down.
Yeah.
Was there musical instruments?
There was no musical instruments and no music.
Okay. You mean not even listening?
No, I mean, I remember my pops listening to, like, you know, Jim Reeves, Patsy Cline and stuff. It just didn't speak to me.
Okay. But there, now it does. Later on, you got into Patsy, right? She had some bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That her backing bands, that like that kind of cowboy swing, right? A lot of tic-tac bass. Yeah, it's baritone guitar, right? Tenor guitar, trippy stuff. But Econo, never Bogarden. I think it's really interesting stuff. But you know, when you're a kid, you wanted to have your own world anyway. What was the first record you bought with your own money, Brian?
The first cassette tape I bought with my own money.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It doesn't matter on the medium. Yeah.
Well, it kind of – I think it's important, right? It shows how old I am. It's like, you know.
Okay, mine was 8 tracks, right? Columbia. So that's not even how old. It's like one little period, right? Because cassettes have come back. 8 tracks never came back.
I never bought an 8-track, but the first tape I bought was Skid Row.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What's his name? Mr. Bach, right?
Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah. I don't know.
He's more together now, but he had a little bit of drama in his life earlier.
Yeah. Oh, I can't really stand by a lot of the things he said off the microphone, but I can tell you that music excited me when I was, I guess, like 10 years old.
You know, the conflict between the artist and the art, I think, is always going to be there. Sometimes you want to meet the cat, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, Evan can tell you all about that.
Okay.
We don't have to go there, though.
No. So what about first gig you saw?
I definitely saw, I don't know if you call them gigs, but I also was really inspired by
live
just,
music.
Like parades. You know,
yeah,
I remember
going
to the town parades and just listening to the fife and drum stuff. And that's another thing that drew me to the snare drum in particular, which later in life I did a lot of playing.
But first, trumpet, right? That's your first music instrument. So you must have been in marching band, maybe?
Yep, I did that. I always did all the school bands, you know, any kind of music I could do until high school when I just got too busy playing in my own bands. I was doing, you know, marching band.
Let's go back. Because you said you wanted to get off the trumpet, right? But you kept playing trumpet while you did drums at the same time? Was it a parallel universe thing?
Well, the way that the band and the school had it is you had to pick. And they wouldn't even let you play drums in the beginning. They wanted everyone to get their hands on a musical instrument, learn how to read music. And I just fought against that. To my own fault. Like, looking back now, I wish.
It's hard. Once somebody said, youth is wasted on the young.
Mm.
No, you got to grow up, right? You can't know this shit until you look back, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
I just wanted to play the music that I wanted to play, and because I grew up
probably
around
rock
the
and roll,
of,
right?
Yeah, I could already play that. I didn't need to learn how to read anything or take lessons. I already could play the music I wanted to play, and I did that. I had a little band, and by 11, I was like gigging, you know.
I should ask you though about how did you get a drum? Because the drum sets, now that guy had a basement three doors down. Now,
right.
What your parents like? Fuck it, we're gonna turn our house into a practice pad.
No, this is what I did. So because I grew up in like a suburb, there were older kids, not this guy I told you about that I was peeping on, but down through, he was old. He was in high school when I was like 10.
That is old.
Yeah. So, but there were other kids in the neighborhood that were like 3 or 4 years ago older than me, and their parents were hippies. So great, because I had a paper route from the time I was not. I just saved my money and I would buy little cymbals. My parents got me like a little crappy used drum set for $100, and then I immediately took that drum set and put it in the basement.
No, but I think that's important, Brian, because they're in on it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I had an older brother too that saw my interest, and really he threw in some money too, and they bought me this little $100 drum set.
Elvin Jones, he got his first drums with his sister helping out. And his paper route. Yeah, there's on YouTube.com.
I didn't know that.
I ain't shitting you, Brian. You go to YouTube.com and there's a half-hour documentary called Different Drummer, and Elvin Jones talks about it.
Are you serious? I was just listening to that live in Seattle recording.
Oh, wow. Elvin is really loud on there, huh?
Oh, man, he's so loud. He's so good. I'm just such a huge Elvin fan. Yeah, I didn't know that about him, but that's cool.
I just hit you to it. When we're done with the show, you can get over there. It's only a half hour. And he's talking about how no one wanted to play with him because he wouldn't play. You know, his time is kind of like the ocean. It's waves and pulses, you know.
Yeah, I love that.
Right. And other cats might have come from Africa that way, because I've heard of other drummers. The straight time thing is kind of not universal. Anyway, let's go back. You have a band at 11 years old.
Yeah. So I got that drum set, immediately moved it into the kids I used to skateboard down the road. They're the hippie parents, and I moved it into that basement. So my parents never had to deal with the noise.
Right.
And we started gigging. I was 11. They were like 14.
What was the material, original or copying off records?
In the beginning, we were just doing Nirvana covers, Hendrix covers.
Just trying to learn stuff, right? Yeah. That's all me and D. Boone did, because no one else wrote songs until the fucking movement. 70s was not happening, Brian, let me tell you. Not happening. So what was the name of this band?
That band never had a name.
Oh, but you were doing gigs?
We were doing gigs.
Like Brian's band's going to play.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I still have this article. It's in the Hartford Current, because I grew up in like a Connecticut suburb near New Haven.
Okay.
And it was a Hartford Current article.
Hartford. What was the club there? I played at Trinity College, but Anthrax?
Yeah.
There was a hardcore club near there. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's a whole part of my, like, you know, teenage years is the hardcore scene in Connecticut, Tune-In and New Haven, and going back and
forth. New Haven also had an old rock club called Toads.
Yep, and they had the Tune-In. I don't know if you ever played there.
Never did there. But LNG in New London, where the Coast Guard
LNG?
Yeah.
That was the other stomping. Those are like, so my first, to go back to what you asked about my first concert, first one I really remember was just going to this VFW, like hardcore punk show.
Yeah.
And that's where I saw all of these bands that were coming out of like Worcester and New York and New Haven. What's that?
Worcester. I played there with Primus opening up for him, and yeah, it's not Worcester, it's Worcester.
Worcester. Yeah.
In fact, that's where this guy told me about it. You're having a good time. It's a wicked pisser.
Totally. Yeah, I'm
you know, puking out the nostrils, that kind of good thing.
Yeah, these like rough towns. There's like a lot of like rougher towns in there. But you know, the LNG's pretty rough too.
I remember.
People talk about Connecticut now. I mean, yeah, and it does. Even the town I grew up in, it had a lot of wealthy people around. But you know, most of my friends, we were the, you know, my dad was the high school janitor, my mom was the housekeeper. All these people.
You know why I think, Brian, the duality that was Burbs. It was Burbs for New York City.
Yep.
Right, the I-95 crowd, right? So, but then there's also Rust Belt. It looks like it was bombed, right? The factory's all burnt. And so it was this dangling duality.
Exactly, you know, but I look back on it now and I feel so privileged and lucky because I grew up in a town with some wealth, even though my family wasn't that way. My school had a music program.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And that was a huge deal because if I needed to get my hands on, say, a trumpet, I could do that.
Right.
I'm really great.
Another soundtrack thing you did. With Angel Dardorian, who I had on the show a few episodes ago, Jordan Dykstra, C.J. Camarari. That's a tough one, but it's a beautiful name. And this is Hail Rick Scott, Hail Satan. I want a title. You probably have forgotten.
Sausage Bones and Common Capers.
Hey, no, back.
Show. That chunk of music started out with, well, the people I just described, right? Brian here, the guest, Angel Derridorian, Jordan Dykstra. Let me try and fuck this up again. CJ Camarieri.
Camarieri. Yeah.
That's a tough. And then CLW CC Watt, this is a project I got with Sam Lockward in Iowa City, Big Pig. Kara, Kay's got a new album, who was born in New Haven, by the way, right? Her daddy her daddy put in the pewter system in Yale.
Oh, yeah?
I wouldn't shit you. And then Big Boys after that. In the old days, Minutemen and Big Boys were the only U.S. bands to get the idea from pop group to do funk and punk. And that was interesting. They had it in New York City, too, with the contortions and stuff. And I had Cynthia and RB from the Bush Tetris yesterday. Wet Cigarette out of Canada, not I. Deerhoof from their brand new record. They're doing a couple year now. Divine Comedy, Only Now featuring Robin Sukadia, Cavern Trance, Skeletons in the Cloner, Mike Adams in His Honest Weight. I think that's got Thor Harris on the drums. Great drummer, man. Austin.
Oh, yeah.
And Krishna soundtrack with Brian McComber, The Woodpecker. Okay, so that gig was, profound? A sea change? Seeing those
Yeah, that was the first time where I felt like, because I had been to see, I guess my first technical concert was, I went to see White Zombie at Toads, and then I saw Fishbone and Helmet play.
Ah, those are good bands.
So I was seeing, like, bands I would see on MTV at the time. I go to those shows, but the real show that was the game changer was that VFW Hall show in some little town. Where
Why?
Because
it made you want to play, right? Not just be a watcher.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep, exactly. You know, it was like the audience was participating, people jumping on stage, right, grabbing the microphone. It felt like, it just like that was the aha moment where I'm like, oh, we could do this. And yeah. So from there on out, that was when I was 14. And from there on out, I was just playing shows, booking shows.
Oh, you mean helping putting on shows?
Yeah, yeah.
People forget about that part, almost all, you didn't have like promoters that were just some snake. Well, you did have those. You're going back to vaudeville and shit, but in the punk movement, you have dudes that were in bands. Like Dukowski built the circuit we're still touring on from Black Riot.
Yeah, and exactly. You know, like one of the bands I saw at that concert I just mentioned was this band Converge.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're sort of the heirs of what you guys did. And, you know, I guess I am to an extent too, but to blaze that trail, to find those promoters or venues or just like, you know, collaborators.
Right. Co-conspirators.
Co-conspirators is an even better way to put it. That's all because of you guys and Flag. And a lot of people would describe even what like Kurt is doing. You know, yeah, I would say Kurt Balu from Converge sure. is somebody who's, you know, in that whole band with the record label and the recording thing. And it's just sort of, you know, the next generation.
It's trying to explain punk to people. Okay, you could try to call it a style of music, but it was like parallel universe. Let's just get music out because no one will let us. So we're going to do it.
Yeah, it didn't. The genre thing was never an issue. I suppose, yeah. like, when I came into it, it was becoming more of a thing, you know?
Yeah, well,
like,
humans
but,
like
but,
to poison everything. Right?
Yeah,
Little Richard sold way less Tutti Frutti's than fucking Pat Boone. That's just a reality. That's like 1955 or something. Let me ask you. After high school, do you go to school for higher education for music?
No, because of the situation I grew up into and the scene I grew up, like the sure. idea of going to music school was seen as stupid or just
yeah,
like pretentious
right, right.
or, you know, I never, exactly. I went to school and I studied biology.
Okay.
So I got a degree, but the whole time I was playing music, you know.
Yeah, like but I bet you that fucking studies in biology somehow informs your music.
I really think it did, especially doing research,
because
the whole idea when you're in a lab, and I did this after I got a degree, and then for, like 8 years, I just worked in different laboratories doing biological research, which supplied me the necessary, you know, money to go on tours.
Right,
so I lost money.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Like Nils Klein working for Wilco, right? He can do all those experimental things. Thank you,
yeah,
Mr. Tweed.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Tweed. But what I was saying about the biology thing is, you know, from the one cell protozoa to, you know, human beings with all those cells, they're almost different versions of bands. It's the same kind of thing, how things, systems have to relate with each other on an organic level. Bands have to do that too.
Yeah, and in the lab, man, it's about collaborating. For instance,
right.
if I need to know how to do this one technique in the lab to get this, to run this experiment that I've never done, I got to reach out to somebody and be like, hey, you're good at this thing. Do you want to help me? And can I help you? You want to collaborate? And I do that. That's what I do with music, too.
Yeah. Right. That it takes a little bit of humility, but also takes a little bit of, courage, saying, you know, maybe this cat is maybe they go together. But that's interesting. So you said you did the touring thing.
I did, yeah.
Now, what was that like?
For the most part, it was great. I haven't done it as much lately, but,
we're talking older days.
Yeah. So I did a lot of it with just like different punk bands or like a couple of different bands, whatever band was doing it around me, you know,
You were more like, helping other bands or did you bring guys into your band?
I was more helping other bands. I guess as a drummer, you can get bounced around a lot and
sure,
that
bass guys too.
Yeah. I just was like down to play with whoever, and then I joined this band with Angel. I joined it about a year before Angel did, but Dirty Projectors, and that one got me on the road a lot.
And they're Brooklyn cats, right?
At the time, yeah. That one was like how I got on tour with Deerhoof and Battles and Hella and all these bands, opening up for them.
Right,
that's how I met. Yeah, that's how I met all these amazing musicians.
Talk about a drummer, composer, band leader, Greg Sarnier.
Oh yeah, I mean Greg is a huge influence on me.
And he shows you. He also proves that you don't get ruined by higher education because he went to Oberlin, right? He was telling me he was studying Gregorian chants. I think you can inoculate yourself from that fanny pack. What I hate is when they turn shit into sports. You know, all of a sudden, who can play giant steps faster? Fuck that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I guess absolutely. I wish I paid more attention and tried to learn to read music and to orchestrate a little bit more because those tools could have done me a lot of good nowadays when I'm doing. But again, as a kid, I was just like, I'm going to do my thing. And
are you going to know?
Yeah, I didn't play to a metronome ever. I don't know how. I can't still. It's really difficult for me to do that. But if you're trained to be a session drummer or whatever, you know, that's like what you got to do and you got to do it this way. And I was always like, fuck that. I want to do my own thing.
Were you ever hit the Milford Grays?
Oh, yeah.
Because he's one of those guys who brought in that Elvin thing. You know, it's not straight time. It's like the tide or the pulse
of
the ocean.
It was the man. I was just filming a praying mantis the other day.
Is that right? Interesting relationships between their men and women.
Oh, yeah, that's another scientist drummer. He's such an inspiration to me because he's a scientist.
Yeah.
Like, that guy is a scientist. You know, drumming is a part of that exploration for him. And even getting into just like every, oh man, if I had been in a position to study drums or like looking for that, I did have a teacher at one point. I studied a little bit with Faron Akla.
Yeah.
Who's part of, you know, taking a lot of the stuff Coltrane. He has a double duo, Robbie
sure.
Coltrane and Sean but like, you know, I never, and the part of the reason I liked Faron is he never told me what to do. Half of the lessons with him were telling me stories about how he, you know, interacted with Miles Davis at the chiropractor or something. That was the lesson.
John Coltrane talked about, he said it was very hard to talk to Miles Davis about music. He didn't want to do it. I think he wanted you to find your own way, maybe. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, October 29, 2021, Dish Watt Peter Show special guest Brian McComber. Hold tight for hour two. October 29, 2021, second hour, Watt from Pedro Show.
justice background investigates the mysteries of nature. I got a short response to a long question. I got a short response to a long question. Mystery solved!
Thank you.
was, I mean, I'll give you the 30-second story. So I was on tour flying to a show, and I sit next to this young woman. She's working on Final Cut, and I'm working on Pro Tools. We're both working. We start talking. She's a filmmaker, and I end up going on to help her with her movie. And then wow. that one got into Sundance. I go to Sundance. I meet more filmmakers. And then next thing I know, I'm at Cannes scoring a film with some Indian dude. I have to go to Mumbai for a month and lock myself in a hotel room and come up with a score for his film. It's going to be at Cannes in a couple weeks. And I just didn't sleep, locked myself in a hotel room in India and just cranked it out. So I just fell into it. And then that just got more work. And I kept going. I kind of stopped playing the drums during that time because I was composing.
Okay, let me ask you about the composing.
Yeah.
It's like a soundtrack to a movie for a guy in Mumbai. So
yeah.
You composed the whole thing on a drum set?
No. I did it all on my laptop alone in a hotel. I didn't even have a MIDI keyboard. But what I did is I kind of like just had people send me a bunch of tracks. And then the way I composed is just kind of creative editing in Pro Tools and adding all kinds of effects, making these mix chain or effects chains.
We're taking advantage of the graphic part of it, right? Where you can move things around, man.
Yeah.
Old days with you wouldn't have liked the 70s with the fucking razor blades.
Oh my God. I couldn't do what I do at the speed that I do it without, you know, digital workstations.
Yeah. Like, you know. So dudes fly in things and they're like, what you're doing is like being a conductor with little performances.
Yeah, I don't even consider myself much of a film composer as much as maybe like a musical director or producer almost more. Because very rarely am I actually playing or scoring as in like pen to page the notes for people. For instance, with Brandon, I just drew him a graphic score.
Yeah.
I wanted him to do these like sort of lines of and how I wanted the lines to move. And then I just had him bow the banjo like a maniac he is.
Right.
And, you know, he sent me a bunch of tracks, and then afterwards I spent many, many weeks editing those tracks and adding to it, adding timpani drums, adding synths, but it started with him and a graphic score, which I just doodled, you know?
Right,
but if
right,
I'm
right.
given great, great ingredients from these amazing musicians, it's like if you're cooking a dish, if you have good, fresh vegetables and, you know, fresh ingredients.
Yeah, right.
To go wrong, and then it's just about how to put them together.
Well, you need a cat on the rudder, right?
Yeah,
it's hard with like 10 dudes on the rudder, doing
yeah.
it by committee or whatever. But okay, I've seen these definitions
uh-huh.
nowadays, like in the old movies, right? Music by, you know,
yeah,
that you know, Jerry Goldsmith or whatever, Sam Pebble. In the middle of the movie, they stop for 10 minutes, so you hear this big suite. But now uh-huh. I see like descriptions like sound designer, soundscape.
Yep.
So is this more like what you're talking about?
Maybe, yeah. I think those terms are coming into vogue more just because they better describe what the creative party is doing, probably. You know, like when I think of a composer, I think of the guys you just mentioned who probably notated and orchestrated everything to a piece of paper.
Right.
And then, you know, it was all coming through them as individuals. You could think of maybe from the band world, people like Dylan or some of these old singer-songwriter types in the same kind of, you know, cut from the same cloth, whereas the groups that you and I were a part of were more like bands. It was more collaborative,
right?
So it's I'm trying to bring that to what I, you know, in quotes, film scoring, or have this more collaborative exchange. And I try to not let my personal ego get in the way or make it about me, even though I am the one doing all and making all the choices. Like a director does that too with film, right?
I was going to say, you're given direction, but by this doodling graphic scores, I think you're giving a lot of leeway to your cat you're working with.
Yeah, it's all, and that's why, you know, my scores are usually only as good as the musicians I can get to participate and collaborate, and, you know.
Again, the food analogy, right?
I like that analogy.
Yeah,
I use it too much.
Even if you got corn in the turds, it's going to taste like turd.
Exactly.
And it could be real good corn. Look, you gave me a trial day two. I'm going to play it. Thank you.
Delta Sierra Juliet, this is Roswell. Do you read?
Roswell, this is Delta Sierra Juliet. Is there any known traffic below 5,000?
Delta Sierra Juliet, no known traffic.
Well, there appears to be a large aircraft below 5,000, Roswell. Over.
Delta Sierra Juliet, what type of aircraft is it?
Roswell, I cannot confirm.
Bright. Seems to be like landing lights.
Delta Sierra Juliet.
Roswell, this is Delta Sierra Juliet. The aircraft has just passed over me at least 1,000 feet above.
Roger, is it a large aircraft? Confirm.
Size is unknown due to the speed it's traveling.
Is there any Air Force in the vicinity?
Juliet,
known Air Force in vicinity.
Roswell, this is Delta
Sierra Juliet. It's now approaching from the east toward me.
Delta Sierra Juliet.
Seems to me playing some sort
of a game, Roswell. It's passed over me 2 or 3 times at speeds I cannot
identify.
Roger, what is your altitude?
My level is 4,500, 4,500.
Delta Sierra Juliet, confirm that you cannot identify the aircraft.
Affirmative, I cannot
identify the object. Over.
Roger. Stand by. Val, get over here. Put the cams on and listen to this.
Roswell, listen, Delta Sierra Juliet. It is not an aircraft.
I cannot identify any engines or source of propulsion.
Over.
Delta Sierra Juliet, can you describe the aircraft?
Roswell, as it's flying past, it's a long shape and metallic.
Otherwise, I cannot identify.
Roger, and how large would the object be?
Roswell, it appears to be stationary. What I'm doing right now is orbiting.
This thing is just orbiting on top of me.
It's also got a green light, shiny on the outside.
Of
the
Delta Sierra Juliet.
Roswell, it just vanished.
Delta, Sierra Juliet?
Roswell, would you know what type
of aircraft I've got? Is it a military-type aircraft? Over.
Delta, Sierra Juliet?
Confirm that the aircraft has just vanished?
Say again?
Is the aircraft still with you?
It's approaching from the southwest.
Delta, Sierra Juliet.
Roswell, the engine is up idling. I've got it at 23, 24, and this thing is...
Roger, what are your intentions?
My intention is to go to Carlsbad with a strange aircraft and hovering above me. Do you copy, Roswell? It is hovering above me. Delta, Sierra Juliet, you do me 7 days.
Delta Sierra Juliet. Come in, Delta Sierra Juliet. Do you copy? Delta Delta Sierra Juliet. Come in. Delta Sierra Juliet, come in. Delta Sierra Juliet, this is Roswell. Do you copy?
Watch for Pedro Show, that chunk of music started out with Trial Day 2 from Nuts soundtrack. Brian McComber, Kurt Ballou. Then Kant's Absent-Mindedness from Love Bounded by Water. And finally Roswell from the Last Transmission soundtrack, Brian McComber. John Dietrich, incredible guitar man. I got to make an album called the Hand of Man Band. Yeah, it was with Tollum and Tim Barnes, a great fucking drummer man. And improvised, right, over a couple of days, and then they put it together. I'm curious about, like, you were talking about old days of making soundtracks. So the composer, you said, is writing out all the stuff. And, like, mm-hmm. me and you are from an experience where there's more bands. I'm thinking of, maybe I'm fucking full of shit. Well, maybe I'm partially, but maybe I'm even more full. But I'm thinking of cartoon soundtracks with Spike Jones and what were they called, the City Slickers? And now, was that shit really scored out, or were they watching the movie and trying to play to it? A movie, cartoon.
Oh, man, I think, I don't know a whole lot about this. Who's, oh, man, I'm trying to think of the, I should know this name, it's on the tip of my tongue, the composer who did all of the Looney Tunes and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Jerry Goldsmith?
I know he did the Sand Pebbles, but he did a lot of movies, but, I was talking about the performer, like the things where you hear whistles and, right, Spike Jonze's music was, I'm not talking about our modern day Spike Jonze, a young man director. I'm talking about the guy in the 50s that was making this music out of sound. There's no synthesizers yet, right? So they're hitting bells and whistles and they use this for some, it's non-symphonic music. You know, they're not using violins and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were doing, there's all these tricks they used to do. Man, I'm so not up on the history of film.
What you're saying is like when that lady was sitting next to you on the airplane.
Yeah.
She had a Final Cut. So they sound is synced right with the video, right?
The images. Right? Yeah. The images. Yeah.
And I think you could do that in Pro Tools also. But
totally.
Is that how you work?
That's how I work. Yeah. A lot of times. I mean, it varies on every project. Like oftentimes the director will come in and ask me to write some music for which they can rehearse to or even like block a scene with or, you know, direct with. That's very rare. Usually what happens is
the music comes first and then he wants to cut the video stuff to it.
Sometimes, yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm actually doing that right now with an amazing musician named Judith Berkson. And
well, you were talking about MTV, right? That was that whole mode in the 90s, right? They were always making video to the music. But then that went away.
Yeah. And so sometimes, like this one I'm working on right now, I had to do all the music beforehand because the animators wanted to animate to the music. But usually, especially with, you know, low-budget films, what ends up happening is the director's editing themselves and putting in music, whatever they want, temp. Yeah. We call it temp music, and then I have to replace that.
It's like a placeholder.
Yeah, and that has its pros and cons, mostly cons. But, you know, it's a part of, in filmmaking, jamming. Jamie Acano, you know, like that's,
if you
want to get music in your movie to make it feel good, you just use what you can get your hands on, and then afterwards you figure out how to replace it or license it.
A little pirate.
Yeah.
A little bit of pirate. But in the meantime, also, it's, I don't know if people know the money's involved in the film world.
It's like there's
incredible.
A lot.
Now, I know because of Kay, you know, Kay got a couple Emmys and Oscar, she even got, and even more, the Golden Reel or something from the other. She said it was just like hardcore. All the guys want to run the show, and she had to break her leg off in their ass. But a lot of this shit where it's not really merit-driven. It's like connects and all this jive people bullshitting. And so,
yeah, there's so much of that. You know, it was interesting for me also, again, coming from the same kind of community, music community that you did, just a little bit younger, but you know, I really wasn't aware of how many films are being made under the radar that are low-budget films, or even no-budget films, you know, stuff right. that's getting made. Like that one film I gave you, some of that Krisha soundtrack, I mean, that entire film was made for $50,000.
Whoa.
Which, you know, I think is just a testament to the filmmaking that it came out as good as it did. But, you know, or that woman, for instance, I told you I sat next to the plane, Hannah, her name's Hannah. And, you know, that film was made for, I think, $100,000. So they can be made. It's still a lot of money compared to what it costs to make an album.
I know. That's called econo, right?
Yeah. And that's how I did my film scores, too. Sometimes the budgets I was working for in the beginning were just, you know, not even enough that if I calculated my hours based on what I was paid, it's something like $3
Yeah, but you got experience. Maybe not all payment is in the coin.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, I had to learn. And for me, it was like, oh, this is my schooling. This is the education I never got. Is I'm just gonna work on these films.
It's like you were your own intern.
Kinda, and that comes with some good things and some bad things. Yeah, right. I had to learn a lot of things.
At least
too,
you got autonomy, but you had to pay for it. Yeah. We're at the end of October 29, 2021, the Dishwap Pedro Show. Special guest Brian McComber. Hold tight for hour 3. October 29, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
machine. Discovery machine. Death kind of thing. Discovery machine. Death kind of thing. Discovery machine. Death kind of thing. Discovery machine. Separating things in 2 minutes down.
For Pedro, so start off the third hour, Kerosene, live. This is St. Vincent with Brian McComber, Shazada's Molly, great bass man, and Nat Baldwin. Then ID de Femel, The Portrait of a Vagabond, Jerome Brayton, Damon Smith Duo, This is Clear, Ray Shin, Sweet Chlorine, and then Gorski from the Blow the Man Down soundtrack, Brian McComber, Tala McDonough's, all right, there's Tala. Fucking small world. Michael Pestel and Jordan Dykstra. Wow. So how'd you meet Tom? You know, him and his wife sold the van. Now they're touring by train.
Yeah, they were just here. They just crashed with me like last month before they headed to Europe. We jammed a little bit.
Yeah. Like they're touring by train. Me and Kay once did a little Dutch-Belgian tour, but, you know, we're talking huge things. He's balls out and playing gigs all the time and
music. Yeah, he's giving you a run for your money on your own philosophy.
Yeah. Shows to go, yeah. Don't pound the chest too hard. What? Somebody can do it better. Okay. So, okay, you see the techniques vary. Not always because of the budget thing, right? Some directors,
yep.
They're probably more hands-on. Some are more like, you know, make it be so, man.
Yeah, it's everyone's so different, you know? It's like if you were in a band with Tollum and Brandon, right, you know what to expect. Those guys are going to play, like, insanely fast, virtuosic stuff. But then you can be in another band with somebody else, so it's just one note you hold for right. A while, and you just let it wash over you. And with the film stuff, it's everyone's different, and that's kind of what I like about it. I get bored playing the same music all the time. When I joined that group, Dirty Projectors, part of what I liked about it is it was always different, and there was a lot of room for improvisation, but within the same context of, like, a pop band. But with film scoring, everyone's different. I kind of, like, make a band for whatever score I'm into, and with, like, you know, that one you just played with Tollum, that was for this film, Blow the Man Down. They wanted it acoustic. They liked this idea of, like, you know, prepared pianos or the metal and wood sounds. So I brought Tollum in, and he did a great job.
You know, drummer man, as soundtrack man, I know one other cat that's gotten pretty successful. He played on the last Captain Beefheart, I Screamed for Crow. Cliff Martinez?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's like a staple of the film world. There's a lot of drummers that are in.
Are they? That's just why I wanted to ask you. You think, because, you know, drummers, I remember, you know, Georgie was way into Chico Hamilton. And I remember reading in those, you know, a little while ago, 40, 50 years. But she couldn't get songwriting credit. Drummers can't write.
Well, hey, drummers aren't usually writing lyrics. I think this is also
and
like
maybe
a,
the notes the best... last real short, so they're not real notes?
I don't know. I think this is the vestige of a lot of the Western, yeah. Oftentimes, like I think like racist history of music here. Because, right, because, you know, just take like, you know, just take like, Senegalese subar drumming or something. You know, how do you get credit for that? It's got no lyrics, it's got no melody. Well, in our world, Western world, that means there's no intellectual property behind it, right?
Right. You get, but you know what? In a way, maybe drummies are coming back through the fucking movie biz.
I mean, I don't know. I think hard to say. I think oftentimes in scoring, it's not about a lyric or a melody. It's about a timbre or a tone. And I think drummers are best suited to kind of explore that world.
Well, for sure, it's a collab. This is one thing I learned about from Kay about this movie making. Buttloads of people are involved, even a Kano one.
Yeah, it's true. It really is like take your. I mean, maybe the analogy for that one is if you're a promoter of a music festival, yeah, and you have to go from place to place with all these different bands and all these moving parts. Like, there's just so much more, and it's tricky, you know.
Yeah, yeah, jungle rock. Okay, yeah. Ticket to Ride, Person to Person soundtrack. Let's hear it.
stvorili stvoreno. Ko rogovi u vreći. Po prvi put sam sam. We'll be right back.
From the jump off is when he said he took the wind, stop blowing. The way I swing the mic, I can draw blood from the wind.
I got Chicago.
In the stage, you gon' see him. This that Bruce Lee versus Chuck Norris in Rome at the Coliseum. Amazing with that pen work, something like a hymn and song that touches your soul when you at church. Whenever I start, Bismillah spoke first. With the mic, I'm Jesus Shuttlesworth. Jada Kiss killed it when he said, when the come in, they use the same skill they use the way the winds with. Staring at the sky above. This is Rage One verse in surgical gloves. My mind is at peace, please don't disturb that. I'm so focused now, and I know y'all hate that. This is Trojan Horse Hop for hip hop. One of the main reasons that I can't stop the face with his nose missing. It's the face of Satan. Eventually, I'ma write the war in heaven. The guy I cut look like Benny Blanco from the Bronx. Line him up with the bevels, razor sharp. I'm a demon with the clippers, yo. Lost my mind to get out south. I'm on the red or the blue line. Time to trash drop a Lambo, true story. Even though I can't afford that though, just to feel that and drilling and rush. To feel the power shift the speeds with the clutch. One exhaust stamps on my passport. Actually, I gotta get one first. I'm on Bach using elbows on some Flavari shit in Dubai. Riding through the desert on a camel. I'ma make it if you with me or I'm Dolo. Spellbound the odds like I'm K-Solo. Live and direct, nobody dictate this shit from me. Show and prove us how I move exactly. Stronger and more wiser, less stressor. Bars stay aggressive, more angrier. No savior, says tower behavior. I'm on my Wrigley Field. I'm on my Comiskey Park. I'm on my Soldier Field. I'm on my United Center. I'm on my Sears Tower. Just let me talk my shit. Yeah. Clippers, yo.
Watch for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Ticket to Ride, Person to Person soundtrack with Brian McComber, Charlie Belmore, and Paul Thorstenson. Then we had Davo Ye Biovuk, which is, I'm destroying the Slovene language now. Sorry, I don't mean to. The Devil Was Hot, live at Club Coca and Split 2015, this Trobakova Kushne Peshi. Then Tolum with that KFJC, live. Oh, that great radio station, right? Alto, Los Altos Hills, I think, up by the city and shit. I Got Chicago, Clean PB Block. Oh, he spelled it weird. It didn't weird, just different, B-L-A-C. Black Nation, Jason Bourne. And then finally, Warsaw, All These Voices, soundtrack with Brian McComber. All These Voices, soundtrack with Brian McComber, Paul Wienko, and Sam Reeder, or Ryder. I'd have to ask the man, Bernstein, you know. There's rules over there, but when it comes over here, it's, yeah, like with your name, right? It's ask my ma or ask my pop.
Yep.
Enlighten us to the Ticket to Ride. There is a Beatle Connect, people, but I guess we're all.
Yeah, that one I just had this guy, Paul. He played in this band, Dissolve, that I grew up admiring as a kid. It's hardcore, man. He just screams his brains out. So I gave him the track and just said, do your thing. You know what this music's supposed to sound like. And he did. He just sent me back a bunch of, it was all there. It sounded like a finished song. It just didn't have any lyrics. He was just screaming gibberish. But there is one hook where it sounds like he's saying, I got a ticket to ride. So I don't think that's what he's saying. I never even asked him, actually. But there's no lyrics. It just sounds like lyrics. And so that's where the song came from.
Coincidence.
Yeah, I guess that's like a pretty Talking Heads kind of thing.
Right, guilt by association.
Okay. Or like the gibberish leads to actual lyrics.
But in some ways, you know, having a petri dish kind of trip where you just experiment and trying to cultivate, maybe that's what you got to do to bring something out, you know, out of the box. That sounds corny-ass, but something that ain't calculated.
Yeah, that's what I love doing. I love experimenting and I love finding the happy accidents and just letting those ride and then those become something great along the way. So I try to let those things happen.
Now, can you play drums at your pad?
I can, yeah. I've been playing more actually lately, but I haven't, you know, there's a few years here where I didn't really play much at all.
Right. But you do a lot of work at home. You got a little studio?
Yeah, I got a little studio here that I can get my basic stuff done in and yeah.
And what about playing gigs? You stopped doing that?
You know, I was supposed to play. Stevie Buono was putting on a show.
Stevie Buono?
Yeah. He's the one.
He's living out here now.
And I was supposed to do something with him and Angel, Dara Dorian, and a bunch of other people, but it got canceled right before the pandemic, and I haven't been out yet since. But I hope to play some more gigs soon.
Okay. And when you do, it's like helping other cats out, or is there a Brian McComber band?
I don't really have my own thing that I go out and do. Yeah. Mostly, I guess that's like the film scoring thing is my thing. Sure. But I like playing with other people. I like helping other people, especially those who have helped me. I like helping them do their thing too. So there's a few people. And they, I know if they need drummers here and there, I'll be
well,
happy.
Let me ask you this: what about other cats doing? Do you look up to other people who are doing soundtracks?
Do I look up to them? Like,
you know, like learn from and shit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course.
You want to name some? Because I ain't too hip to that world.
Well, Rob Lowe, one of the guys I did that It Comes at Night soundtrack with, he's gotten into doing scores recently. He's somebody that's influenced me as far as like learning how to do some modular synthesis stuff. He just did a soundtrack for that Candyman movie. It's coming out. Or it's already out, actually.
So synthesizer. And we're not talking with a keyboard, right?
No, modular. Yeah, modular. Yeah. Rob is one of those dudes who's doing, like, film score stuff. He's done a lot of other things where helped out, like, Johan Johansson on a lot of his things and helped me out. You know, he's somebody that I look up to as far as that world. And, like, Cliff Martinez and stuff.
I just admire the fuck out of his stuff. I went to his website. I couldn't believe all the films. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are people that heavily influence, especially him, just as a drummer playing in rock.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, he never got to do a gig. They did a video, but Captain quit music right when they got the album done. You never got to do a gig with him.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I think he played in Red Hot Chili Peppers for a little while.
Yeah. And he had something with Tito LaRiva called Easy Teeth, too. I mean, he was in our punk scene a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But amazing, man, what he's done and stuff. And I don't know, you being a drummy and the soundtrack thing, I just made a connect with that. Like,
absolutely.
And is there a website people can find you on the internet?
I have a website that's kind of more catered to my film score stuff, just BrianMcComber.com.
Okay, let's spell that. BrianMcComber.com.
Yep.
Yeah. And, I mean, great honor to have you on the show and everything, and you probably got your hands full with something right now, right?
I'm doing a couple things, but I'm always hopefully not too full. I've been too full in the past, and I as you know, also it's not a good place to be for your
yourself. Yeah, you don't want to let people down, right?
Exactly, especially what I do. You know, a lot of people, they pass off their movie, this thing that they've labored about, oftentimes is the most detailed
their baby,
story,
right?
And they give it to me to try to do stuff. So I definitely take that responsibility seriously.
That's beautiful. I know it's tough and shit, but it's better than just wearing down your shirt sleeve. Take it to heart.
Yeah, you can't take too much because you're going to let everybody you're down, including yourself.
Right. Really beautiful. Very inspiring spiel I got to do with you, Brian. Thanks so much for being on the show. When you get other stuff, you're welcome aboard anytime, please.
Thank you. Okay. And as well, thanks for having me.
October 29, 21. Nope, 2021. Don't jump the gun. What? Watch for Peter, so keep your powder dry.